大学生英语在线，你想知道的问题你告诉他，你没想到的问题他告诉你。最顶尖的英语专家，最有效的学习方法，雅思托福 GRE 轻松得分没问题。 Question of the day， 大学生英语在线，每天上午6:30，晚上11:00，与您准时相约。
大家好，这里是北京外语广播正在播出的大学生英语在线 Question of the Day， 我是 Larry， 欢迎大家加入我们的 QQ 群，下载更多的英语学习资料。我们的 QQ 群号码是116274477，欢迎加入。今天呢是周末，我们请来的专家老师是来自 UEI 学校的壮壮老师，他会给我们讲一讲有关于 TED TED Talk 的内容。
Hello, everybody, and we will explore something lighthearted. 今天找了个轻松的话题。The title of the speech is Why We Laugh.
Why We Laugh.
对啊，我们为什么会笑啊？
Because it's funny.
是吧？当然就是这个，大家都会想到，因为这个事儿比较逗，咱们才会笑，是不是？但是呢，这个其实科学吧，要是去探索的话，还是有很多可以探索的。好，首先来看呢，一个生词叫 laugh and laughter。laughter 是名词还是动词啊
？laughter 是名词，因为 laugh 是动词嘛。
对，所以这个 laughter 呢，就是指这种笑，这个行为啊，这个出来的这个声音啊 ，laughter。The speaker Sophie Scott is a neuroscientist, and also a stand-up comic.你看这个人他的职业真是跨界跨得够远的。一方面呢，人家是 neuroscientist， 这是什么学家呀？
neuroscientist， 哎，我知道是神经学家。
对，另一方面呢，还是个 stand-up comic。 stand-up comic 就是跟周立波啊、这个说相声啊什么这些人是一样的。
stand-up 就是说他
站着，
stand-up on the stage in front of the audiences、站着，哎，面对观众一个人说相声呢。
对，然后呢，这个人呢，这个喜剧演员也不叫演哈，反正他就是一个喜剧，算是一个逗乐的人哈。然后呢，这个人他有什么建树呢？ While exploring the neuroscience of speech and vocal behavior, Sophie Scott stumbled upon a surprising second vocation, making audiences laugh as a stand-up comic. 你看人家这两个职业吧，还平衡的挺好，是吧？一方面呢，他呢研究这个神经科学，他重点侧重于呢就是语言、话语、说话，还有呢声音的这个举止。同时呢，他就有另一个职业，就是偶然的就发现了他的这个第二职业，就是让观众开怀大笑。好， Now, back to the speech. Did you know that you are 30 times more likely to laugh if you are with somebody else than if you are alone?
哦，说的是如果你和另一个人待在一起的话，你笑的几率要比你一个人待着
大百分之大三十倍，
大三十倍呢。
也就是你一个人吧，你比如说你看见一个什么好笑的事儿吧，你未必哈哈哈那么笑。但是你要是和一群人在一块儿，或者是和有另外一个伙伴在一块儿的话，你就更容易笑了。这就是他的一个研究成果。
哦，明白了。
好，然后紧接着呢，他会在讲话过程中呢，是探索一下到底是什么情况下人会笑，然后人到底为什么会笑。Cognitive neuroscientist Sophie Scott shares this and other surprising facts about laughter in this fast-paced, action-packed, and yes, hilarious dash through the science of the topic. 所以他这个讲话呢就比较逗啊，叫 hilarious。然后他用的这个词好玩，叫 dash。dash 就是波折号那个词。
对呀、波折号 dash 一横杠嘛。
一横杠。所以呢他说呢这个讲话的过程中呢他就是把这个讲话形容为 hilarious dash。好，那说之前呢我可以给大家透露一点，在听的时候呢他放的那个就是采样收集的不同人的那个笑声确实是很有感染力。那我们就先放一下录音让大家听一下。
咱们都乐一下啊。
Hi, I'm going to talk to you today about laughter. And I just want to start by thinking about the first time I can ever remember noticing laughter. This is when I was a little girl, I would have been about 6. And I came across my parents doing something unusual. Well, they were laughing. They were laughing very, very hard. They were lying on the floor laughing. They were screaming with laughter. I did not know what they were laughing at, but I wanted in. I wanted to be part of that. And I kind of sat around at the edge going, whoo-hoo! Now, incidentally, what they were laughing at was a song which people used to sing, which was based around signs in toilets on trains telling you what you could and could not do in toilets on trains. And the thing you have to remember about the English is, of course, we do have an immensely sophisticated sense of humour. At the time, I didn't understand anything of that. I just cared about the laughter. And actually, as a neuroscientist, I've come to care about it again. And it is a really weird thing to do. What I'm going to do now is just play some examples of real human beings laughing. And I want you just to think about the sounds people make and how odd that can be. And in fact, how primitive laughter is as a sound. It's much more like an animal call than it is like speech. So here we've got some laughter for you. The first one is pretty joyful. We're off. Now, this next guy, I need him to breathe. There's a point in this where I'm just like, oh, you've got to get some air in there, mate, because he just sounds like he's breathing out. This hasn't been edited. This is him. And finally, we have this is a human female laughing. And laughter can take us to some pretty odd places in terms of making noises. She actually says, oh my God, what is that in French? It's all kind of with her. Yeah, I have no idea. Now, to understand laughter, you have to look at a part of the body that psychologists and neuroscientists don't normally spend very much time looking at, which is the ribcage. And it doesn't seem terribly exciting, but actually, you're all using your ribcage all the time. What you're all doing at the moment with your ribcage, and don't stop doing it, is breathing. So you use the intercostal muscles, the muscles between your ribs, to bring air in and out of your lungs just by expanding and contracting your ribcage. And if I was to put a strap around the outside of your chest, called a breath belt, and just look at that movement, you see a sort of rather gentle sinusoidal movement. So that's breathing. You're all doing it. Don't stop. As soon as you start talking, you start using your breathing completely differently. So what I'm doing now is you see something much more like this. In talking, you use a very fine movement of the rib cage to squeeze the air out. And in fact, we're the only animals that can do this. It's why we can talk at all. Now, both talking and breathing has a mortal enemy. And that enemy is laughter. Because what happens when you laugh is those same muscles start to contract very regularly, and you get this very marked sort of zigzagging, and that's just squeezing the air out of you. It literally is that basic a way of making a sound. You could be stamping on somebody. It's having the same effect. You're just squeezing air out. And each of those contractions, gives you a sound. And now the contractions run together, you can get these spasms, and that's when you start getting these kind of things happening. And I'm brilliant at this. Now, in terms of the science of laughter, there isn't very much, but it does turn out that pretty much everything we think we know about laughter is wrong. So it's not at all unusual, for example, to hear people say, humans are the only animals that laugh. Nietzsche thought, oh, humans are the only animals that laugh. In fact, you find laughter throughout the mammals. It's been well described and well observed in primates, but you also see it in rats. And wherever you find it, humans, primates, rats, you find it associated with things like tickling. And that's the same for humans. You find it associated with play, and all mammals play. And wherever you find it, it's associated with interactions. So Robert Provine, who's done a lot of work on this, has pointed out that you are 30 times more likely to laugh if you are with somebody else than if you're on your own. And where you find most laughter is in social interactions like conversation. So if you ask human beings, when do you laugh? They'll talk about comedy and they'll talk about humor and they'll talk about jokes. If you look at when they laugh, they're laughing with their friends. And when we laugh with people, we're hardly ever actually laughing at jokes. You are laughing to show people that you understand them, that you agree with them, that you're part of the same group as them. You're laughing to show that you like them. You might even love them. You're doing all that at the same time as talking to them. And in fact, the laughter is doing a lot of that emotional work for you. Something that Robert Provine has pointed out, as you can see here, and in fact, the reason why we were laughing when we heard those funny laughs at the start, and why I was laughing when I found my parents laughing, is that it's an enormously behaviourally contagious effect. You can catch laughter from somebody else. And you are more likely to catch laughter off somebody else if you know them. So it's still modulated by this social context. You have to put humour to one side and think about the social meaning of laughter, because that's where it really, that's where its origins lie. Now, something I've got very interested in is different kinds of laughter. And we have some neurobiological evidence about how human beings vocalise that suggests there might be two kinds of laughs that we have. So it seems possible that the neurobiology for helpless, involuntary laughter, like my parents lying on the floor screaming about a silly song, might have a different basis to it than some of that more polite social laughter that you encounter, which isn't horrible laughter, but it's somebody's behaviour somebody is doing as part of their communicative act to you, part of their interaction with you. They are sort of choosing to do this. Now, in our evolution, we've developed two different ways of vocalising. Involuntary vocalisations are part of an older system. The more voluntary vocalisations, like the speech I'm doing now. So we might imagine that laughter might actually have two different routes. So I've been looking at this in more detail. And to do this, we've had to make recordings of people laughing. And we've just had to do whatever it takes to make people laugh. And we've got those same people to produce more posed social laughter. So you said, imagine your friend told a joke and you're laughing because you like your friend, but not, you know, not really because the joke's all that. So I'm going to play you a couple of those. I want you to tell me, you think this laughter is real laughter or if you think it's posed. So is this involuntary laughter or more voluntary laughter? What does that sound like to you? Posed? Posed. How about this one? I'm the best. Not really. Now, that was helpless laughter. And in fact, to record that, all they had to do was record me watching one of my friends listening to something I knew she wanted to laugh at, and I just start doing this. Now, what you find is that people are good at telling the difference between real and posed laughter. They seem to be different things to us. Interestingly, you see something quite similar with chimpanzees. Chimpanzees laugh differently if they're being tickled than if they're playing with each other. And we might be seeing something like that here, these sort of involuntary laughter, tickling laughter, being different from social laughter. They're acoustically very different. The real laughs are longer. They're higher in pitch. When you start laughing hard, you start squeezing air out from your lungs under much higher pressures than you could ever produce voluntarily. So, for example, I could never pitch my voice that high to sing. And also, as I say, you start to get these sort of contractions and these weird whistling sounds, all of which mean that real laughter is extremely easy, or feels extremely easy to spot. In contrast, posed laughter, which does, it's something, well, it might sound a bit fake. Actually, it's not. It seems to be, it's such an important social cue. We use it a lot. We're choosing to laugh in a lot of situations. It seems to be its own thing. So, for example, you find nasality in posed laughter, that kind of ha-ha-ha-ha-ha sound, that you never get, you could not do if you were laughing involuntarily. So there do seem to be genuinely these two different sorts of things. We took it into the scanner to see how brains respond when you hear laughter. And when you do this, yeah, this is a really boring experiment. We just played people real and posed laughs. We didn't tell them it was a study on laughter. We put other sounds in there so to distract them. And all they're doing is lying, listening to sounds. We don't tell them to do anything. Nonetheless, when you hear real laughter and when you hear posed laughter, the brains are responding completely differently, significantly differently. What you see in the regions in blue, which lies in auditory cortex, the brain areas that respond more to the real laughs. And what it seems to be the case, when you hear somebody laughing involuntarily, you hear sounds you would never hear in any other context. It's very unambiguous. And it seems to be associated with greater auditory processing of these novel sounds. In contrast, when you hear somebody laughing in a posed way, what you see are these regions in pink, which are occupying brain areas associated with mentalising, thinking about what somebody else is thinking. And I think what that means is, even if you're having your brain scanned, which is completely boring and not very interesting, when you hear somebody going, ah, ha, 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 you're trying to work out where they're laughing. Laughter is always meaningful. You are always trying to understand it in context, even if, as far as you're concerned, at that point in time, it's not necessarily anything to do with you. You still want to know why those people are laughing. Now, we've had the opportunity to look at how people hear real and posed laughter across the age range. So this was an online experiment we ran with the Royal Society. And here we just asked people two questions. First of all, they heard some laughs and they had to say, how real or posed do these laughs sound? The real laughs are shown in red and the posed laughs are shown in blue. What you see is there is a rapid onset. As you get older, you get better and better and better at spotting real laughter. Such as 6-year-olds are at chance. They can't really hear the difference. By the time you are older, you get better. But interestingly, you do not hit peak performance in this data set until you're in your late 30s and early 40s. You don't understand laughter fully by the time you hit puberty. You don't understand laughter fully by the time your brain is matured at the end of your teens. You're learning about laughter throughout your entire early adult life. If we turn the question around and now say not what does the laughter sound like in terms of being real or posed, but we say how much does this laughter make you want to laugh? How contagious is this laughter to you? We see a different profile. And here, the younger you are, the more you want to join in when you hear laughter. Remember me laughing with my parents, I got no idea what was going on. You really can see this. Now everybody, young and old, finds the real laughs more contagious than the posed laughs, but as you get older, it all becomes less contagious to you. Now either we're all just becoming really grumpy as we get older, or it may mean that as you understand laughter better, and you are getting better at doing that, you need more than just hearing people laugh to want to laugh. You need the social stuff there. So we've got a very interesting behaviour about which a lot of our sort of lay assumptions are incorrect. But I'm coming to see that actually there's even more to laughter than it's an important social emotion we should look at. Because it turns out people are phenomenally nuanced in terms of how we use laughter. There's a really lovely set of studies coming out from Robert Levinson's lab in California, where he's doing a longitudinal study with couples. He gets married couples, men and women, into the lab, and he gives them stressful conversations to have while he wires them up to a polygraph so he can see them becoming stressed. So you've got the two of them in there, and he'll say to the husband, tell me something that your wife does that irritates you. And what you see is immediately, just run that one through your head briefly, you and your partner, you can imagine everybody gets a bit more stressed as soon as that starts. You can see physically people become more stressed. What he finds is that the couples who manage that feeling of stress with laughter, positive emotions like laughter, not only immediately become less stressed, they can see them physically feeling better, they're dealing with this unpleasant situation better together, they are also the couples that report higher levels of satisfaction in their relationship and they stay together for longer. So in fact, when you look at close relationships, laughter is a phenomenally useful index of how people are regulating their emotions together. We're not just emitting at each other to show that we like each other, we're making ourselves feel better together. Now, I don't think this is going to be limited to romantic relationships. I think this is probably going to be a characteristic of close emotional relationships such that you might have with friends. Which explains my next clip, which is of a YouTube video of some young men in the former East Germany on making a video to promote their heavy metal band, and it's extremely macho and the mood is very serious, and I want you to notice what happens in terms of laughter when things go wrong and how quickly that happens and how that changes the mood. He's cold, he's about to get wet, he's got swimming trunks on, got a towel. Ice.
Ice.
What might possibly happen? Video starts. Serious mood.
Yeah. And my new band is called Serious Chill.
We're off. And his friends are already laughing. They're already laughing. Hard. He's not laughing yet. He's starting to go now.
好嘞，这个关于笑的这个演讲我们就听完了啊。原来如此啊。
对，你听懂了吗？其实他说的是呢，人在笑的时候呢，其实他未必是真心想笑，但是出于一个社交的礼仪的考虑，他呢想给其他的人显示我同意你的说法，
潜意识里，
对，我跟你是一头的，或者是呢我对你有好感。
嗯哼，所以潜意识里你会笑，然后呢你会先做出那个动作。那心理学家就有研究过了，我之前看过，说这个如果你想让自己高兴的话，你就咧开嘴 咧开嘴做那个笑的动作，然后自然而然你就会开心很多，这是一种、肌肉反射到这个神经上的一种规律。
对，说起来这个肌肉呢，刚才呢在演讲过程中呢，他也提到了 rib cage， 就是说大家在笑的时候和呼吸的时候呢，你这个肋骨这个rib cage 哈、整个形成的这个胸廓呢，它是会使劲用力的挤压那个空气，以至于呢你能发出那个很尖的声音啊，这个很尖的这个声音呢，平时你唱歌你使劲有意识的去发都发不出来，但是笑的时候呢就可以这样。
我来试一下。
你别把狼招来。啊，
咱们刚才其实就有那个感觉了。
对
对。
还有一个呢，他说你能够分出来呢是真笑呢还是假笑，就有一种笑呢就是 involuntary， 就不是你自觉的，确实是因为那个事儿逗，你就不由自主你就笑。还有一种呢就是属于装着就是要笑，就是人为的你强制你自己要笑。然后说这种区别呢，他提了年龄越小的人就是分不清楚这两种笑的区别，而到了三四十岁的时候大家一般就能分出来。所以说呢他有这个 social side of laughing 啊，就是确实有这个人类社交方面的需要才会去笑。
我也看过一个这个纪录片说怎么能分辨呢，很简单，就是皮笑肉不笑，就是、
那肯定是假笑。
对，什么意思呢，就是说你笑的时候只有嘴是咧开的，眉毛没动，那这个就可能是装出来的笑。如果、
看眉毛，
眉毛啊，脸上的肌肉啊都动起来了，那你这个笑就是真的笑。
哎呀，是这个样子。
对，没错。
哎呀，我觉得就有的人，我想起来我们一个同学，他就是什么时候吧，他就不笑，特严肃的时候吧，你看着他也在笑。这是不是就是所谓的笑面虎啊？就是他总在笑似的，
脸型长得好。
其实他睡觉的时候，你觉得他那个表情好像也是在笑的。这太神奇了哈！
是啊，嘴型长得好。
挺有意思的。好，然后呢，这个别的人也还继续介绍一下这个说话的人哈。其实这个讲演者还是挺了不起的一个学术上有成就的人哈。他说呢 ，She is a deputy director of the University College London's Institute of Cognitive Neuroscience， 啊，是认知神经学的这个。Deputy Director
啊，这个认知神经学，这个认知就是 cognitive，神经学呢
？Neuroscience。
OK。
好 ，Sophie Scott also seeks out the neurological basis of communication, whether it's speech or vocalized emotion。就除了研究笑以外呢，他还研究这个讲话啊，人发言。还有呢这种出声音的表情。哎，那出声音这个 vocalized emotion 你觉得除了笑还包括什么呀？那
哭
应该也算，
对，
是不是？
对，
嚷嚷也算，是不是？
嗯
哼。所以呢你要看这有的人愤怒的时候大喊大叫，这个都算啊。然后呢 as a pioneering researcher in the science of laughter, she's made some unexpected discoveries, including that rats are ticklish。哎，他刚才在讲话中他也提到了，就是说哺乳动物都能笑，而且他说就是人笑的时候吧，就是人在笑的时候其实和那个原始的动物的叫声是没什么区别的。好，他说这个 rats are ticklish， tickle 就是隔着它挠痒痒，就是弄它身上痒痒，然后就会笑，就是说耗子它会笑。哎呦，耗子这是一什么笑声呢？
这个就是那个笑的时候那个发声的方式。
不是，我就在想象，如果耗子的眉毛也在那儿动，那是一个什么景象？这耗子有眉毛吗？
哟，这成妖了都！
真是哈，
耗子鼠精了都。
鼠精。And that the one tactic that's almost guaranteed to get someone to laugh， 你要是想让一个人笑，就是肯定能奏效的这么一个神器是什么？
是什么呢？
是什么呢？
是什么、
is to show them someone else laughing，
就是把别人放在他面前，那个人也笑，
哎，
那个人笑他就笑了。
就是说你要弄一个录像，这个录像里边人笑作一团，甭管因为什么原因，那肯定别人也笑。
我说呢好多综艺节目啊，在一些幽默的环节、
配
上那个观众笑的那个场景啊，
对，
配上那观众笑的音效啊，
对，
让你发笑。
我还认识一个人，
本来不搞笑
，就是说的话，因为要启发你一下，所以就是变成应该单独有这么一个职业，就是领笑者，就是领着大家笑哈。好，今天的这个 题目呢，希望让大家过一个轻松的周末。那如果想获得回放网址，还有看到这个更多的学习资料，请大家加入我们的 QQ 群第三个。
嗯，我们的 QQ 群就是116274477，再说一遍，号码是116274477，欢迎您的加入。
See you next time.
See you.
世界上没有不受限制的自由。
就像你有吸烟的自由，但你不能自由的吸烟，还影响他人的健康。
2015年6月1日，北京市控制吸烟条例正式实施。届时，室内公共场所、工作场所和公共交通工具内禁止吸烟。
为了更好的生活，控烟需要全社会行动起来。
讲文明，树新风，北京人民广播电台公益广告。
给你一个机会，你最想得到什么东西？
汽车
，money，
豪宅，
漂亮女朋友，
芭比娃娃。
健康。
北京人民广播电台提醒您，关爱自己的健康，才能带来长久的幸福。
It's you, it's you, it's all